This is On the Media. I'm Bob Garfield.
And I'm Brooke Gladstone with another cultural trope to debunk. Do war protesters, dating back at least as far as Vietnam, spit on the troops? Is that something they really do? The question emerged in January 2007 when the anti-war group United for Peace and Justice held a rally in Washington. The coverage of that rally became a hot issue in the liberal blogosphere, mostly because of the placement of a source in some of those stories, Joshua Sparling, an Army veteran who lost part of his leg in Iraq. Deep in an article in the New York Times, he claimed that a belligerent protester spat at him, and he spat back. The critics noted that the story didn't report that Sparling was part of an organized counter-protest, nor did it mention that he seemed to be a frequent victim of soldier haters, at least according to his own testimony on Fox News, where he was a regular guest, and that he'd been seated at a President Bush State of the Union address in the seats just behind Lynn Cheney. In short, said the critics, this guy was not just a veteran gunslinger, but a partisan one.
The New York Times stood by its story. They told us at the time that its reporter witnessed the spitting incident with her own eyes. We took them at their word. After all, haven't we all heard of this kind of thing happening to vets from another unpopular war? 15 years ago, sociologist and Vietnam vet Jerry Lemke set out to trace the incidents of spitting stories in the media. He delved into press archives from the 60s and 70s, and what he found was very surprising. Not a single first-hand account of a vet getting spit on, and close to no published claims by anyone so ignobly victimized.
So it really wasn't until about 1980 that these stories began to circulate. They sort of began to pop up like mushrooms in the spring and begin to appear in popular culture. Films like the first Rambo film make reference to Rambo says he was spat on when he came home.
It wasn't my war. You asked me, I didn't ask you. And I did what I had to do to win, but somebody wouldn't let us win. And I come back to the world, and I see all those maggots at the airport protesting me, spitting, calling me baby killer and all kinds of vile crap.
So that's what the spitting story sounded like in 1982. Let's take a listen to what it sounded like in 2007. Here's Josh Sparling on Sean Hannity's radio show describing his alleged spitting incident.
That was the worst afternoon of being American that I've ever had in my life, and they actually made me feel ashamed to be a soldier almost. They kept calling me a baby killer and a murderer, and they said I was a disgrace, and I had blood covering my hands. They don't know how I sleep at night.
So here you give your leg for your country. Here you go off and you put your life at risk for your country for the right to these morons to say whatever they want at their little rally there. And the thanks you get for it is just like a lot of vets after Vietnam, you get spit at.
You know, that, and that's exactly almost how I felt. I thought back, and I'm sure it wasn't as bad as it was back then, but I just was like, wow, this is must have been what they felt like.
Apart from your particular suspicions about this incident, tell me how the story that played out last week resembled the stories that you've been following over the last 35 years.
Well, the veracity of the stories themselves is only part of what I'm interested in. Stories like this may be true or they may not be true. Of course, I can't prove that they're not true, but it's how they play into a kind of betrayal narrative for why we lost the war in Vietnam, and in this case, why it is that we would lose the war in Iraq also. The allegation here being that it's protesters at home that undermine the morale of the troops. And some Bush administration spokespeople saying that this is lending aid and comfort to the enemy. And both of these are kind of themes in the spitting stories that followed out of the Vietnam War.
Why are we so prepared to believe that these were commonplace incidents in the Vietnam era?
Well, it's a face-saving device. It helps construct an alibi, the alibi being that we beat ourselves, that we were defeated on the home front, and that we, this most powerful nation on earth, was not defeated by this small upstart nation of Asian others. It's a dangerous myth because coming out of Vietnam, it kept alive the idea that we could win wars like Vietnam if we just stuck together as a country, if we just stayed solid behind the war effort.
I want to ask you about self-fulfilling prophecy, or maybe self-fulfilling mythology, but Is it possible that as a society we have so internalized the idea of returning soldiers from unpopular wars being spat upon that it actually becomes something that protesters might do thinking that's, you know, the thing to do? Could that be going on right about now?
No, I think it's more the opposite. I think the internalization of the myth, I think that's a good insight. But I think it's more likely that people returning from Iraq expect to be spat on, and that what they expect is what they think happened to Vietnam veterans. So they come home looking for this to happen and looking for a chance to tell the story of how they were spat on when they came home from their war.
Okay. Jerry, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Jerry Lemke is a sociology professor at the College of the Holy Cross in Worcester, Massachusetts, and author of The Spitting Image, Myth, Memory, and Legitimacy of Vietnam.